Gi I domik sa tigexis tigo ni stu anagok big sippy daki. Hello, everybody. It's me, your host for Talks with a Fox podcast, Andrea Truejoy Fox. Today is a special day because it is what many of the Indigenous people, myself included, in honor of our Indian Residential School survivors, Orange Shirt Day. I wanted to share some thoughts, some reflections, and some inspirations as a Blackfoot community member, as a teacher, and as a residential school survivor's child. I would like to start off, first of all, by acknowledging and thinking of all of our residential school survivors, those who are with us today and those who have gone before us. My heart goes out to who they were as children and who they are as adults, those that were able to survive and make it through the schools, because as many of you may know, many of our children died in those schools. And I also want to give special acknowledgments to the children of the residential school survivors, because we have all been affected by the impacts of residential school. You may be hearing terms such as intergenerational trauma, intergenerational impacts of residential schools. Well, these are not new terms. However, as I guess you could say society continues to become aware and also acknowledge what has happened in this country we know as Canada, home of the First Nations people to this land, the first caregivers of our beautiful and sacred Mother Nature. When we think of all that has happened, we sometimes, many of us will feel sadness because everything that has happened, you know, if you look in our communities, there's many telltale signs that we have all been impacted. And today I wanted to talk with you about my thoughts as a Nitsitapiaki and, as I mentioned earlier, as a teacher, because this is a very sensitive and also very important and necessary topic to share with students of all ages, children, youth, adults, and community members. And I wanted to share my thoughts on this, you know, because it's important for us as Indigenous people to continue to reflect on where we are at and to also, as we go along on our healing journeys, to look at what has happened. You know, my mom always says, when we're looking at things and people are putting together information and knowledge and understanding certain things, processes, our journeys, one of the Blackfoot words she starts off with is Ekyakbi, what happened? And when we think about everything that has happened, we must go back and look at what has happened, because in order to heal and repair these wounds that many of us still carry to this day, we need to look at what has happened. And that brings us understanding to what is happening right now in our communities and into ourselves as individuals, to our families, our relationships, our parenting. You know, relationship is very important in my culture, in the Blackfoot culture, and many other Indigenous cultures. Everything starts with relationship, really. Relationship with ourself in mind, body, and spirit. And relationship with each other, with our parents, with our children, with our siblings, with our cousins, you know, our grandparents. You know, it just, we're all connected to each other. Even if maybe physically we aren't, you know, we don't get to see each other as much, or you know, some of us have lost, many of us have lost loved ones, we are still connected, and we are connected to our communities, even when we move away, you know, to different places that may be close or far from our home communities, we are still connected. And as I think about this day, Orange Shirt Day, which, by the way, when you have a chance to visit the Orange Shirt Day website, that's orangeshirtday.org. I'll share the links as well in my episode notes here so you can take a look and learn some history on it. The historical aspect is very important. You know, that's part of that Blackfoot word I shared with you. Agyapi, what happened? You know, we can understand what happened and we can start to see what's still happening right now. And so visit the website and you'll that's a good place to start. And why I say a good place to start is I'm a firm believer in that people are always the best place to start. Our knowledge starts with who we are. And books are amazing. I am a bookworm, okay? I love to read. You know, all my family and friends know that about me, how much I love to read. And I'll share a few stories here today with you as well about my experiences in my early education journey. But yes, books are a great place to start, you know, and they are wonderful tools filled with knowledge. And still, I say people are always the best sources of knowledge. Lived experience too, you know, when we think about somebody who lived through something and is then able to share and teach what they have lived through and have learned from these experiences, that's a great place to start. And then, of course, with, you know, the advancement of technology or lack of access to people in communities, you know, some people may just not have connection to their community because they live far away or they've moved somewhere new and they're trying to, you know, find their grounding and connection to those communities that they're now newly located in. And of course, non-Indigenous people who, you know, for many, it's okay, where do I even begin? Well, you know, you can go to these websites and they're good places to start. But like I say, you know, they are a seed, and from there they are gateways to connecting you to community. And for the non-Indigenous teachers, you know, I often have friends who are in the teaching profession who are Indigenous and non-Indigenous, but speaking to my non-Indigenous colleagues who often consult with me or, you know, like to ask what I'm thinking of when it comes to how they're approaching Indigenous education or teaching Indigenous ways of knowing. Really, you can't really teach that unless you've lived it, you know? However, you can share what you have learned from those who have lived it. And then I always say, bring those voices into the classroom. You know, we have to bring the Indigenous voices with us into the classrooms, into the schools, into the institutions, because it is us. And when I say us, I'm referring to Indigenous Niitsitapi people, the first people. We can only really tell that narrative best ourselves, because like I said, we lived it and we are still living it. So Orange Shirt Day really is, I think it's beautiful that we have this day. And I also have feelings of sadness attached to this day, because I think of, you know, when you hear the word residential school, there's so many feelings that come to the surface for us as Indigenous people. You know, we think of where my generation is at. You know, I didn't go to residential school, thankfully. However, you know, my parents, my grandparents, those generations, unfortunately, and the generations before that had to endure such a traumatic, devastating, and brutal way of surviving. And like you said, not everybody survived. You know, there's so many children who were lost and died. And, you know, it's a dark history, as we say, of what happened. But I think of, you know, this day as well. I think of how we also remember and honor the resilience of our ancestors, of our grandparents, of our parents, those who attended residential school. You know, my gosh, talk about resilience, those that are still standing and physically here with us in this world today in 2020, you know, resilience, they walk with resilience. Even if they are going through challenges because of the impacts of residential school, they're still resilient. They're very resilient because they lived through that. And it's sad. It's devastating to think of what has happened and what could have happened if I was the next generation to attend residential school. You know, it's not a beautiful story. There's heartbreak. There's everything that's tied to all the impacts, those that came out, you know. And I encourage you to look into things on your own as you continue to become aware or further educate yourself about the history of residential schools, Indian residential schools here in Canada. And then, like I said, it's also this day I feel all the strength and beauty of our people who are still standing strong and resilient and moving through this world and constantly having to adapt in a world that really was not created for us to thrive in. And yet we are thriving. I want to say that, and I want to give a shout out and hold my hand up and my feather up high to all of us, because every single one of us who is walking this earth right now, you who's listening out there, you know, in the Indigenous communities, we are miracles and we are gifts and we carry that resilience with us. I think of, you know, by the way, Orange Shirt Day is September 30th, and it was chosen because September was the month when our children were taken away, when we were taken away to go to residential schools and be removed from our families, from our homes, from our communities, and from the world that we knew. You know, all that was beautiful and pure and sacred and connected and loving and nurturing and strong and cultural, all of that we were taken from. And when Orange Shirt Day, the annual Orange Shirt Day, was chosen for September 30th, you know, it's in connection to what many residential school survivors have referred to as a very lonely month, because they know, those that remember know that feeling when they were taken away. I didn't attend residential school, you know. However, for some reason, I always found September, I had mixed feelings as a child when it came to start school. I would feel anxious. I would get sad. I would feel a little excited, but I think that was really just in the hope of meeting and making new friends. But the thought of, you know, going to this colonial institution, I went to school off the reserve, and, you know, the thought of being away from my parents really bothered me. You know, I went to school when I was 5 years old. I started in grade one. I was a early bird, if you will, and started, you know, I was basically a year younger than all of my classmates. And, you know, that's a story for another time, all that, you know, transpired for me being all pretty much being the youngest of everybody in my grades going through school. But, you know, being in grade one and starting off in a colonial institution felt very foreign to me. And yet I came from a, you know, a loving, nurturing home, you know, with both my parents who raised me and my siblings to be proud of who we are and learn our cultural ways and learn our histories. And, but yet I felt traumatized, if you will, to have to leave my home and go away to school in a town that, you know, I didn't really feel connected to, and to a school that I had a hard time finding my place in for many years. You know, there was always that sense of belonging that I searched for. And it was always comforting when I made a friend who was usually from my community in Ghana or Bikani, the other Blackfoot community. I had different best friends through the years from both communities. And what a relief, though, you know, when you're going through school. And at the time, our First Nations population where I was going to school wasn't super high. So in each grade, you know, there was a handful of us, right? And then when we were put in our classes, the numbers got even smaller because, you know, everybody was spread out. So usually there was maybe three or four, maybe five of us in the class. And, you know, just, and me, just to give you a little snapshot of me, little me at the time, I was very shy, like super shy, you know. I didn't like to speak up and I didn't want anybody bringing attention to me. And oh my gosh, always the first day of school, but also always added to my continual anxiety, if you will, about going to school that very first day, was how my teachers always made a point of saying my whole name as they read the roster and called out our names. Like, usually they would just call you by your first and last name, but my dad named me and he gave me the middle name, True Joy. And for some reason, my teachers really liked my middle name, which now that I think about it, was pretty cool. But if you can imagine me, and for those of you who can relate, you know, being super shy and quiet and introverted, you know, that was just so scary. And I dreaded, you know, by grade two, I knew what was coming. And it never failed right up through, like, I think junior high and a little bit into high school. When they'd call my name out, they'd say my whole name and they'd want to know about my name. And it just made me want to, like, hide under my desk, crawl under my desk and hide. But, you know, I didn't do that for the most part. Mind you, I had quite an imagination, like all children do. And I definitely loved crawling under my desk and, you know, avoiding the classroom situations, social situations at times, and then getting lost in a book or hiding out in the library and imagining that it was this big place of magic that was going to take me away from where I was, you know, which was school. So, I mean, those were, as I think about it, those were my coping mechanisms that I, you know, through my imagination, just decided would help me get through school. You know, I remember even creating this whole world, imaginative world in elementary school, and, you know, riding the bus, I just created a whole narrative in my imagination that this bus was really this train that was going to pick me up and take me to some really amazing magical place. And when I'd get dropped off at school, this, you know, that my imagination would continue on. And just, you know, those were the ways that I coped with having to look forward to a place that I really didn't look forward to. And yet I think of our children who went to residential schools and, you know, the teachers would beat you, and, you know, our children were assaulted in so many ways, all the abuses that happened. I didn't necessarily experience a physical abuse, but there were different ways that I felt mistreated or, you know, just ways that I knew my teachers weren't teaching me. Not all of my teachers, but, you know, in the school system, there were ways that I felt a disconnect from how my teachers were teaching us Indigenous students. And I questioned it in my mind, or, you know, I'd have little conversations with my other Native peers and I would be frustrated, you know, and talk with them and, you know, hope that one of them was brave enough to challenge the teacher and tell them, you know what, we didn't come from the Bering Strait. We didn't cross that bridge that you're teaching everybody that we did, you know, that kind of stuff. Or when we were learning about our beautiful Mi'kmaq people, you know, one of my best friends is Mi'kmaq from the East Coast. And, you know, the teachers looking over at you, and because you're Native, they suddenly expected you to be an expert. And not only be an expert in another Indigenous culture that you didn't know anything about, to teach it in some way. As in, okay, Andrea, and now the Native unit. You know, we're going to talk about the Mi'kmaq people, and because you're Native, what do you know about that? Well, I didn't know anything about it, and I wish that I could have advocated better for myself. But now as a teacher, I am seeing this next generation of students, children and youth come up and become their own advocates. And those are things that I love teaching my students. I've taught every age, I can tell you. I started out as a kindergarten teacher, and that was amazing and such a wonderful, beautiful, magical introduction to my teaching journey, professional teaching journey. And then I moved right into high school and junior high right after that. One of the things that I believed in always wanting to ensure and nurture in my students was empower yourself. Be your own advocate. Don't wait for somebody to speak for you. Speak for yourself. And my specializations are the arts, you know, visual arts and the dramatic performing arts. And I often use my drama as a gateway to introduce students to building their confidence and, you know, empowering themselves and not waiting for someone to empower you, but you empower yourself and go be big and bold and beautiful and powerful and remember how strong you are and everybody who's come before you and who walks beside you. You know, I think that's one of the greatest gifts as teachers we can give our students is to remind them and help them recognize the power of their own voice. And that was taken away from us through residential schools and even through my generation. But as I said, I am now seeing this beautiful resurgence of that power coming forward in our youth who are speaking up and speaking out on the injustices that they see are happening in their communities, in this country, in 2020. And it inspires me, and it continues to remind me of, yes, we have a voice. We must use our voices. So back to my school days, you know, it was very interesting. I believe I was in grade 6, and my gym class, we were out on the field. And it might have been grade 6 or grade 5, but it was in middle school. And I remember being outside, and this Caucasian boy and I he started to talk rude to me. And, you know, I may have been shy and quiet, but when it came to somebody really acting aggressive to me in those times, I would finally have it. So I was talking back to him because I didn't like what he was saying to me. And he obviously didn't expect me to speak up for myself. And all I remember was he started attacking me and hitting me and violently. Like it happened so fast that finally the teacher ran over and asked what was going on and restrained him. And I was so angry and I was crying and I was mad. And, you know, I just knew that something terrible happened to me, you know, the violence that he enacted on me. And I just remember being told to go inside and basically wash my face. And, you know, so I ran to the bathroom and I was crying. I wouldn't stop crying. And I remember all the Native girls, the other Native girls, some of them were my friends and some of them had their own friends, but they all came into the bathroom to see if I was okay. And no teacher could have given me the comfort that they gave me when they were just expressing their concern over my hurt, and they were mad over me and angry, and they knew there was an injustice that happened. And as I recall, he didn't really have any consequences. He may have been sent to the principal's office, but there was no talking circle. There was no mediation. There was no, you have to apologize to her for what you did to her, you know, hitting her and acting out violence on her. In fact, what I recall was rationalizations that, you know, he had a temper and he had behavioral issues or challenges. That bothered me and that disturbed me for some time. And then I remember I was in elementary. I must have been in grade 4, maybe 5. And I remember another Caucasian student, another boy, he was being disrespectful and he called me a squaw. And I remember how angry that made me feel. And I had nothing else to say back to him because I knew that word was a bad word. I knew that it was a word that we don't say. We don't call ourselves that. And nobody's ever called me that. I never heard that word really growing up other than, you know, that's a bad word. We knew certain words were used to oppress us and to abuse us, if you will. You know, when words are used against you in a way, that's abuse, verbal abuse. And I remember he called me that. And it shocked me because I never expected him to say that. But he obviously heard it somewhere at home, maybe. And he was repeating what he knew. I always say, children do what they see. So we can tell children, don't do this, don't do that. But really, they learn by experiences and they learn through what they see adults doing, you know, especially at home or whoever the adults are that they spend the most time with, teachers included too. And so obviously somebody was using this word around him and he knew that it was a word that he could use against me as a Indigenous little girl. Anyways, I never told anybody because, again, like I say, if you can imagine me, I was shy and it scared me and it bothered me. And I did go home and tell, of course, my parents, and they were upset and they probably made a phone call into the school, and they made many phone calls into the school because I would go home and I would tell on the people that were hurting me at school, you know, whether it was teachers who were abusing their power, or whether it was other students who were, you know, acting out violence, whether it was through their fists or through words. And my parents would go into the schools and hold those schools accountable, the teachers, the principals, and question them, you know, about their teaching practices and how they treated Indigenous children. And I'm grateful for that because that in turn taught me how to advocate for myself as I got older, of course, and as my confidence and self-esteem developed over time. But yeah, those were some of my school years of experiences that made it going to school difficult. And those are just a few experiences, you know, there's many more stories. So I want us to, today, as you wear that orange shirt, or as you repost and share and talk about Orange Shirt Day, whether it's with your students or your families, your own children, your communities, just trying to imagine how difficult and challenging and heartbreaking and genocidal it was for Indigenous children to be removed from their homes. And we're still faced with challenges in colonial institutions. There's still stories, heartbreaking stories that are coming to light, that are things that are happening in this day and age to Indigenous children, to Indigenous youth, to Indigenous women and men and Indigenous people. We can have all the awareness, but if we're not looking at what it is we can do to change, and when I say we, I guess in this way I'm using we as a reference to society as a whole, to non-Indigenous people. Having that awareness is one thing, but applying what we learn is another. And everybody can make changes. Changes and activism can look like different things, and being an ally can come in different ways. What I would like to say to non-Indigenous people is have an open ear and an open heart and an open mind when you are working with Indigenous children, youth, and communities. And humbling yourself, because you are, when you're in Canada and North America, you know, you're on the land of the First Peoples. And having that humility is going to help guide you through your learning journey, because we're all students. We're all lifelong learners. I am a teacher, therefore I am a student for life, because I'm constantly learning. And that's how I model that for my students, is, you know, I let them know I may be your teacher, but I'm also a student here too, because I'm learning with you. And we don't have all the answers. So to our non-Indigenous teachers, educators, Orange Shirt Day might be a great day to reflect on your own journey, to question your own assumptions, to reflect on how you've been taught and how you are teaching. And always include that Indigenous voice, Indigenous voices, in fact. On your committees, bring those Indigenous parents, invite those Indigenous parents to your parent advisory committees. We can have committees and we can have intentions, all the best intentions, all the right intentions, to work with or advocate for marginalized people, in this case, Indigenous people, students, and families. But if you don't have those voices sitting at your committee tables, sitting on your boards, your school boards, employed in your schools, you're missing out on a lot of knowledge, a lot of wisdom. And that's an injustice in itself, because when Indigenous children and youth see Indigenous bodies in their learning communities, that is an immediate sense of security that you bring forward. That is telling them that you are creating an inclusive community and one that respects where they come from as Indigenous people. When they see Indigenous teachers in these non-Indigenous schools, or Indigenous principals, superintendents, board members, parent advisory committee members, all of that, you're telling Indigenous students that their communities, their histories, their identities matter. All students, any student, has a sense of belonging, has a sense of connection, has a reflection of who they are in the people around them, the leaders around them, those in roles of leadership, such as teachers and all the other staff in the education systems. That does so much to uplift their spirits. And that is so integral to their learning journey. And when children feel safe, welcomed, and feel like they belong in their learning communities, schools, that is going to really be a big part of their success journey in school. I know that when I saw my Indigenous liaisons in the schools at the time, in elementary and in junior high and high school, it made me feel like, you know what, someone has my back. Someone is looking out for me. And that's what Indigenous students see when they see their own people working in the schools in different roles. So I want to give a special mention to Phyllis Webstad for sharing her story. It takes courage, it takes bravery, and it takes strength and resilience and self-empowerment to share a story like hers. Phyllis Webstad is the little girl who wore a shiny new orange shirt that her grandmother bought her for her first day of school. And it was taken from her on her first day of school. You can imagine how devastating that would feel. You know, if you think of your own children or the children in your communities and family and schools, when something of theirs goes missing or something is taken by accident, or, you know, how hurt their feelings get, you know, how they feel sensitive and upset by that. Now imagine something intentionally being taken and physically removed from your body at 6 years old, how devastating that would be. And that happened to many of our children. So today, Orange Shirt Day, we honor our survivors. We honor all of our people who had to endure such a hard, difficult, heartbreaking journey in school. I do have hope, and I want to share with you that when I see the success stories of our children and youth and those our adult learners that they're having in their colonial Western education journeys, I say, you know what? We're still here and we are still thriving because we have something to offer in this world and we have gifts. Every human being has gifts. And speaking specifically to my communities, Indigenous people, there are so many incredible success stories that are out there too. And I want to pay homage to those as well, because that is such a beautiful and wonderful way we can honor our ancestors and residential school survivors by fulfilling our purpose, discovering our passions, sharing our gifts with the world, and helping others. And I see that. I've seen those little miracles in the kindergartners that I've taught. I've seen it in the junior high and high school students I've taught. I've seen it in the adult learners that I've taught at university. And even those in the elderly years. You know, I've taught some different courses and I've been invited to speak to many different types of age groups in Indigenous and non-Indigenous learning communities. And I never underestimate any student, regardless of their age or background or anything. Clean slate for me. Anyone who comes through my classroom doors and is there with me to learn and to teach me too. I just want to say that no student should ever be underestimated. And as teachers, we really are in an amazing place because we get to help nurture and plant seeds for a person's life journey. Because students spend 8, sometimes plus, more hours in a day with us, 5 days a week. And if you coach or, you know, and that's not counting the extracurricular. We spend so much time with young people that we really have a special place in their life because we can really make or break their learning journeys. So a shout out to all of the teachers out there who are doing their best to understand, to inform, to become aware, and to learn how to teach in a very welcoming, open, and respectful way, and to Indigenous students. So I want to finish off my sharing today and reflections with you all with a story of connecting with the land, because right now we're hearing so many wonderful, amazing teaching practices that are now including learning from the land. Last week, I had a beautiful experience with a small group of people, including my mom and my adopted brother. He's a cultural teacher. And a few others who were part of the day where we were sweet grass picking. And it was a beautiful day. I woke up super excited that morning. I was a little tired because I don't know if I slept the best, right? Maybe it was because I was too excited for the next day. You know, really, I was super excited because I was thinking about, wow, I'm going to connect with the land. I'm going to do something outside and I'm going to participate in a cultural activity that is going to bring me teachings and allow me to learn and continue to learn about my history, my culture, and connect, have connection with those in my community. Of course, we did it through, you know, a safe social distancing learning practice. And so we went picking sweetgrass and my mom said prayers. She opened up our day with prayers and cultural knowledge keeper, Monty. He shared his stories of sweetgrass and teachings, and it was really beautiful. When you get outside into the land, you forget about a lot of things that it's okay to forget about. One, distractions such as technology. You know, I didn't take my phone out or look down at my phone until we were done our activity and I got a few pictures of the group. You know, I thought, well, I'd love to get a few photos of everyone picking towards the end of our activity. But prior to that, I was just completely 110% engaged, and so was everybody else. And we were moving our bodies. For someone who has, you know, sometimes I have anxiety and, you know, I get a little anxious, but being out on the land always makes me feel good. It fills my spirit and I forget about anxieties. I forget about stress. I forget about things that weigh on my shoulders at times. And I know everybody who does this can connect and relate. We get outside, you move your body. It really transforms your mind. It takes you to a whole different place, and a place of wellness, a place of connection, and a place of strength. And then we were telling stories and laughing and connecting. It was just wonderful, you know? And here's the funny thing. I have a fear of bugs. Okay, that's a story for another day, but you know, insects, creepy crawlers, okay? Whenever I'm sweetgrass picking, because this happened last time I went out with some students to sweetgrass pick, I found some big spiders in the grass, and oh my gosh, the willpower it took in me to not freak out in front of my students, okay? That was a couple years ago, but this time around, I was, okay, I'm praying to the spiders not to come out and show themselves to me because I really don't want to have a freak out. I really just want to enjoy the picking of sweetgrass. I guess the spiders heard my prayers because they didn't come out, but the grasshopper did. Oh my gosh. And we're just about done picking our sweetgrass. Everything's almost coming to a close. And I'm just getting my last bunches there. And in fact, at this point, I started to pick the mint leaves. And all of a sudden, this big thing hopped out of nowhere, and oh my gosh, I jumped and I screamed and everybody started laughing. And of course, I had to explain to them. I had to explain to them why I was screaming and, you know, jumping and looking pretty silly, you know. And then of course, I tell them the story of my fears and all that stuff. But yeah, anyways, the land humbles you and the land reminds you that we're human. And that it's okay to laugh at ourselves too, because that's what I did. I also laughed at myself, of course, when my heartbeat kind of settled down again and I was able to calm myself and feel okay about trying to pick some more mint, hoping another hopper didn't jump out at me. But yeah, anyways, I just wanted to share that with you because the land teaches us so much about ourselves and about where we come from. And about each other when we get to go out onto the land with others. That's incredible. There's so many beautiful benefits when you go out onto the land by yourself or when you go out with others to the land and to learn and to connect. And I want to encourage all of our teachers listening to take your students outside, take that learning outside. I'll finish off with one more little tidbit here story. One little tidbit story. I was teaching grade 8 and I believe I was teaching language arts and social studies and Blackfoot class and art and a few other things. So my students, they were a very active bunch. A lot of them played sports and did horseback riding and powwow dancing and hockey, basketball, running, just lots of activities, physical activities in their extracurricular. And this was actually in my community. And this group of students was also very playful, if you will, because sometimes you see students when they get to the junior high level and adolescence starts kicking in, sometimes they start to feel restless or they're trying to figure out who they are and just sometimes they forget to play. And, you know, me being a kindergarten teacher in my first teaching job, those little ones taught me a lot and they always reminded me to never lose sight of my inner child, to play. So anyways, this group of grade eights, they would get their work done. And for the last 20 minutes or so, I would take them outside. And there was a playground there that was for the elementary, the grade sixers. And the grade eights, I said, you know what? And they said, what are we going to do outside? Because at first they kind of were like, oh, you're taking us outside, you know? And I'm like, yeah, you finished your work. Let's just get outside. Let's get some fresh air. And it's almost the end of the day and we can finish off our day doing something fun and physical and just let's go outside to the playground. They're looking at me like, okay. And anyways, sure enough, some of them start to play tag and some of them start to crawl and climb and jump and just lose themselves in play. And I always say, you know what? We're never too old to play. Adults, youth, elderly, we're never too old to play. Children know this. But as you get older, somehow, some way, we seem to forget that. But many teachers I know you can relate to, you know, how the power of play. And when we play, we breathe, we move, we connect, we laugh, and we just fill our whole being with so much joy. So, anyways, I loved being able to share that with my students and just seeing them get lost in play and have fun and connect with each other. And I saw different friendships become formed by that, those interactions, because, you know, some of them had their different groups of friends, but when they went outside, everybody was connecting. And next thing you know, everybody was playing in the game. Nobody was left out and everyone was connected. And just, it's such a great thing to see when you see young people do that with each other. So I'm going to teach you three Blackfoot words today. I am still learning my language, and someday I pray and believe that I may become fluent. That is a goal, a lifelong learning goal for me. And in the meantime, I'm going to share some words with you that my mom has taught me. And my mom, Mary, her first language was Blackfoot, and she is teaching it to me. And she's such a beautiful, incredible teacher. You know, and I just love my mom. So I thought I would teach you three words that are connected to some of the things I talked about today. So I'm going to teach you orange, the color orange, because today is Orange Shirt Day. And so in Blackfoot, we say, Otkwinatsi, Otkwinatsi. That means the color orange, okay? Otkwinatsi. Okay, another word I'm going to teach you is sweetgrass, because that's the land learning that I participated in most recently and enjoyed, and the beauty and the connection and the special gifts that sweetgrass provides for many of us in our indigenous cultures, including mine, the Blackfoot culture. So sweetgrass, we say sabatsimo. 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 Sweetgrass. Sabatsimo. And in Blackfoot, we don't say it fast. It's a language that you don't speak rapidly. It's one that you take your time saying and speaking. There's teachings behind that that I'll share in another episode. But I just thought I'd let you know. The Blackfoot language, you know, we take our time and we pronounce it, and there's a whole culture of that in itself of the language, and it represents our way of life. We don't speed and rush through life. Our language reminds us to slow down, to stop, to reflect, to process, and then to continue on, okay? All right, the final word, the third word I'm going to teach you is Mother Earth. Ksahkomi da biaki. Ksahkomi da biaki. Ksahkom means earth, land. Aki is woman. So Mother Earth. Ksahkomi da biaki. So there you have it. The three Blackfoot words. I'll go over them one more time. We have, actually, I'm going to teach you a fourth one because Four is the number. All right, this one means we are aware, to always be aware of your surroundings and your environment. So when you're teaching your students, these are teachings you can share with them to be aware of their surroundings, their environment. And that means that brings them to think beyond themselves. You know, sometimes we can get caught up in just thinking of ourselves, but it's important for us to think of others and those that we share space with. And that includes all beings, the animals, the birds, the fish, the land, the rocks, the trees, the grass, the sun, everybody and everything in the environment around us. Okay. So this is Okayotse. 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 So that means always be aware of your surroundings. Okayotse. Okay. So as you know, I'm a learner, lifelong learner, and I'm a lifelong learner of my Blackfoot language as I continue to learn. And I believe one of the ways that I learn best is when I'm learning something new, I share it right away with somebody else. And that helps me to retain it in my memory and to be able to remember when I need to access, you know, what it is I need to remember. So in this case, language. As I'm teaching you, I'm teaching myself. Therefore, I'm learning. So I'll go over the four words with you one more time. So the first one was, do you remember the first one? Are you listening? Are you paying attention, being a good listener? If you said orange, you are correct. 5 stars for you. Okay. All right. Number one. Nidukska. Number one. Orange. Otkwinatsi. Otkwinatsi. Orange. Sweetgrass. Sabatsimo. Sabatsimo. Mother Earth. Ksakomidapiaki. Ksakomidapiaki is Mother Earth. And lastly, number four, to always be aware of your surroundings or your environment. Okayotsit. Okayotsit. And there you have it. You have four Blackfoot words. And I'm, like I said, learning, sharing, teaching, learning. It's all a cycle, right? The cycle of life. We begin, we start, we grow, we learn, we teach, we share, we begin, we grow, we share, we teach. Well, I want to finish off by thank you for listening, and I would really love to hear your thoughts and hear of the ways that you are honoring Orange Shirt Day and all of our residential school survivors and families and communities. Share with me. I'd love to hear from you what you are doing in your classroom, in your schools, in your communities. Take some photos, send them to me, and I'll love to share them on my page as well. And I love hearing from all of you out there. And I want to thank you for your support and ask you to please leave me a review and share and download, because that allows me to continue to share these stories. And a special shout out to all of my guests that have been part of this journey. And there's so many more exciting things ahead for the podcast. I'm just loving this, and I'm learning as I go, and loving sharing and listening and learning. So in Blackfoot, we say, until we meet again, I'll see you later. Gadakiramatsin. Have a beautiful day. And remember to wear your orange shirt today. Gyan.